We're glad to be joined by Dr. Chisetse Salom-Mibenge, who's got a book out called Sex and International Tribunals, The Erasure of Gender from the War Narrative. Doctor, how are you this evening?
Very well. So glad to be here.
It's good to see you. I saw you in the newspaper the other day. You were at Potiko where you were launching this book. Do you want to tell people what this book is about?
Well, the book is about the experience of war, and it's a gendered narrative. I look at what happens to women in war, and how do international courts, how do local tribunals, military tribunals respond to women after war.
What gives you the authority to write a book like this?
Well, I think I would draw my authority from a couple of sources. The first one would simply be I'm a member of the human race. The crime that I'm talking about are called crimes against humanity, because when one woman is tortured or one woman is executed in an armed conflict, that is not an individual crime. That is a crime against mankind. And the person who commits the war crime is an enemy of mankind. That's the language of international law for these particular crimes. So one, as a member of mankind, of humanity, I must be involved in it. I must have authority. And the second authority comes from my legal training. And I can give a big shout out to my campus, University of Zambia, where I studied law, and where my desire, my passion, my intellectual awakening to war crimes, crimes against humanity, and the fact that women experience war in specific ways was born.
Yeah. All right. Your book starts off with an experience that you had at the city market, I believe.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Do you want to share this experience with everybody?
Certainly. I was 17 years old. I had left campus, and I was heading home to Kablonga, and I was waiting in a bus, and the bus market was very noisy and loud. And two young men approached me. I didn't know them very well. But they approached me and they said, "Chisetse, jump with us into a taxi. We'll take you home and we'll pay for it. We live very near your parents' home." And of course, I agreed. So I left the bus queue and I got into a taxi with these young men. And as I did so, an elderly woman who was selling vegetables shouted after my young men. She said, "You've done well. Take her away from here. They're about to strip her naked." Yeah. And I just remember I was so stunned. I hadn't realized that all of this whistling and noise and commotion in the market by all the young men loitering in the market had been directed at my body. I hadn't realized that I was this close to falling a victim to a sexual assault. And that was a major turning point in my experience of womanhood, realizing that as a woman, I was second class. It hadn't sunk in before. As a woman, my body could be harmed simply because I was a woman, and by very, very arbitrary judges who could determine whether my clothing was indecent or appropriate according to their standard that day, at that moment.
Yeah. I'm not saying you're very old, but you were 17 when this happened.
Yes.
It looks like it's been a many, many years
exactly
since then.
Exactly 20 years since
20
then.
Years.
Exactly
right.
20 years.
Thanks for divulging how old you are now.
Yes.
But what I wanted to ask is, those things haven't stopped happening, because there's something that there's something that you say in the book, which is when you went home and you were narrating this story to your father, he said it's a culture thing.
Yes.
And you called them thugs.
Yes.
Yeah. That hasn't changed, has it?
No, it hasn't changed. And in my father's favor, he was trying to calm me down. I was furious. And I've been busy with his statement for a long time. What is our culture and who dictates our culture? And what gave those young thugs in the market the authority to tell me what my culture is, what is the proper way for a woman to behave? Yeah. I mean, we have a rich culture, a rich gendered culture, and there are proper ways for women to advise one another about what is our culture, what is appropriate behavior, what is modest, what is immodest. But these young men seemed to feel that they could police me, and they were policing me because I was a woman. Yeah. I was just a girl.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, so that's in the first few pages of the book.
Yes.
And then you go out, you go to Rwanda, you go
yes.
to Sierra Leone. What's that experience like? Because I'm assuming that
yes.
when you were there, this is post-war for a lot of these, for both Rwanda and Sierra Leone. What's,
yeah.
what's that like? Being
well,
in that area?
It's very thrilling. One of the most exciting things, I find post-conflict society very exciting. If we think about the Second World War and the changes that occurred in Europe, women could vote in Europe because of the Second World War, because during the war they took on roles that they could have never played in a peacetime Europe. They worked in munitions factories, they became nurses on front lines. In Africa, we know 1960s, after the Second World War, after this massive conflict, after many young African, young Asian men fought with the Allies, you saw these amazing liberation movements gather steam. And finally, the 1960s, we had this huge wave of independence celebrations throughout the continent. So conflict brings change. And in Rwanda, in 2004, 10 years after the genocide, I was excited to be in this country that had been 10 years ago, at the time of the genocide, the poorest country in Africa. And I could see all of these amazing developments, environmental technologies which the country was introducing, infrastructure reconstruction. So in that sense, being in the post-conflict is being in a sudden window of opportunity for change, and in my case, for changes in human rights and for positive changes for women and children and other vulnerable groups.
Yeah. All right. And just bring it home. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of different cases of gender-based violence.
Yes.
In this country.
In Zambia.
Exactly.
Yes.
And when you read these, when you read the newspapers every single day, you're bombarded with one story or the other.
Yeah.
How do we change that?
Well, there's two things there that you raise. One, we are bombarded with images, bombarded with very outrageous and shocking stories. And that has its own effect. Many people become numb, or these stories become entertainment or background noise. And so in as much as I'm really happy that reporting in Zambia and beyond of gender-based violence has increased, the reporting is insufficient if it's only to titillate us. If we turn to the section in the newspaper about the lower courts and all these shocking and scandalous and outrageous stories only to be entertained, that's a problem if we don't move beyond the reporting to active action and response. So there's daily bombarding and a sort of numbing that occurs. But I think change comes in many different forms. So in the 1960s in Zambia, 1970s, I think our women's movement here, we have to thank them, we owe them a huge debt. They were fighting for formal equality, and by that I mean that they were fighting for legal reform. So they were fighting for Zambians to address inequalities in our customary law, which was codified by our colonial government. So they were looking for those inequalities and how to reform them, how to address issues like unfair inheritance laws. Taxes, married women were taxed more than married men and more than single women. A woman couldn't travel without her husband's permission, or couldn't put a child on her passport without her husband's permission, and so on and so forth. That is a start, yeah, to try and get equality, at least in the legal books, in the legal texts. But that's just the beginning. Yeah, I think we all know by now in the millennium that the biggest challenge is not only the laws, but changing the mindsets, changing the status quo. And many men and many women, many women are deeply invested in maintaining the status quo and not changing.
It's interesting because when you talk about changing the mindset, well, there was a conversation the other day on Twitter with, we have these things every Sunday called the Insaka on Twitter, where, you know, they throw around a topic and everybody contributes. It's fantastic. It's like being on a fireplace, but not really being on a fireplace, digitally, that is. But one topic that came out was women and girls of the 21st century, modern girls, having a mindset of just getting married, and that life revolves and the pressures around women to get married. Do you think that plays a role in the number of cases that you hear when it comes to gender-based violence?
Certainly it has a contributing role. It has a role in societies where the only acceptable forms of transition into adulthood include marriage. And definitely in Zambia, our relationships, our social relationships hinge around the married couple and the family, nuclear and the wider family. So certainly it's a definite feeling of, separateness for a grown man or a grown woman, anybody over the age of 25 who has not indicated that they're moving towards that, that life trajectory, which has been seen as the normal and natural life trajectory. Women also bear the burden in all societies of maintaining marriage, of appeasing a partner, of sacrificing for children. This is very much a part of our gender conditioning. And certainly for many women that has meant also submitting to acts of violence, submitting to other forms of oppression within the marriage in order to maintain the marriage and to maintain the status which marriage brings. Because of course marriage brings status. This is one of the chief reasons why men and women enter into marriage.
Alright, just coming back to the book, it's called Sex and International Tribunals, The Erasure of Gender from the War Narrative. What do you want people to walk away with from this book after reading it?
I want people to admit to the overemphasis on sex. When we talk about gender-based violence, when we talk about all the widespread reporting about gender-based violence, we're usually talking about raped women. We're talking about sexually violated women. And this has a very harmful effect on women and men. On one hand, it puts men into the category of rapists, or all potential rapists, or all potentially violent, sexually violent against women. And two, it conceals the wide range of oppression that men and women experience just because of gendered stereotypes, right? So there are men who are bullied or beaten or killed because they are not real men, right? They may be a perception that they have sexual orientation, that is not the right form of heterosexuality, right? You have women who may be abused, you know, again for not fulfilling the proper role of their gender. So if we're not paying attention to gender, if we're only paying attention to the very real, but the very essentialized idea of the raped woman, we miss so much. And gender is really important to analyze. And I'm not only talking about international courts. I'm talking about domestic courts. This is a book that I've also written that I hope development workers would read. When development workers come into Zambia or local development workers work with communities and they say we're doing gender, right? Don't only focus on sexual violence or sexual abuse, but do gender. What are the needs of young men? Why are the dropout rates for young men so high? Right? Why is a dropout rate for women so high? There are different reasons that may affect a girl child and a boy child when it comes to dropping out before high school, but they're both worth exploring because you can't resolve one without the other.
Yeah. It doesn't. At times, it reads like a biography. Would that be correct?
The book is published by University of Pennsylvania Press, which is a very academic press. But University of Penn Press was very progressive in that they told me, bring in your narratives. Initially, when I began this work of the PhD dissertation, I was advised by my professors, take out the narratives. Take out that scene in the Lusaka market where those boys almost sexually assault you. You mustn't bring yourself into the text. Yeah, the academic is like a robot or God, right? Writing, looking down on subjects and objects. You must never put yourself in the text. But fortunately, my publisher, my editors loved my narratives, and they said, bring more narratives in. So bring in the Lusaka market if that's where your passion for this subject was born. Bring in your dilemmas when you're in the field in Sierra Leone and struggling to deal with the testimony that you heard in Sierra Leone from survivors of war. Bring in that conflict that you picked up on, you know, between those two speakers in Rwanda that you still can't decipher up to now. So yes, I think that's important for the academic to begin to bring those personal experiences into the text.
Okay, all right. The book, is it available for people to pick it up in local bookstores?
No, the book is not yet available for sale in Africa, but it is available for sale online. The publisher, University of Pennsylvania Press, has got, you can order online from them, from Amazon.com and many other, you know, leading bookstores.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it will be in the future.
It must be sold in Zambia.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, listen, I mean, you've been a great guest. Thank you so much for coming in. I hope the book does extremely well. And I hope a lot of people, you know, go in and pick up this book. And I hope as well, one of the things that you said was that you hope that the reporting aspect of gender-based cases evolves to not just report about you know, sexual abuses, but to talk about some of the other issues. I hope that does come out with this book. There is something else I just wanted to mention before you go.
Yes.
It's a wonderful cover, by the way.
Thank you so much.
I'm not sure what you want to describe what the cover is.
I would love to describe the cover.
Please, describe what the cover is. It's a fantastic cover.
I'm very privileged to have this cover.
Yeah.
The cover is by Wangechi Mutu, a fellow African, a Kenyan. And Wangechi Mutu is based in Brooklyn, in New York. And when I moved to New York 3 years ago, I discovered that Wangechi Mutu, one of my favorite artists, had her studio in Brooklyn. And I asked Wangechi Mutu if I could use this image, which I've loved for many years, on my cover.
Yeah.
And she agreed. And the cover is of a woman. And the woman is a brown woman. The woman could be Brazilian, she could be Cuban, she could be Zambian, and she's nude. And one of the things Wangechi Mutu does with her work is she talks about the violence against black, brown, African women's bodies in art, in magazines, in education. So in this image, for example, she uses cut-out images from Playboy magazine, pornographic magazines, from Vogue magazine, high-class fashion magazines, and she, National Geographic, and she argued that National Geographic, pornographic materials, all use the black woman's body in specific ways. Mm-hmm. And she recreates this nude woman, and this nude woman is like a fantasy woman. She's also a bit of a nightmarish image, and if you look very closely, you'll notice that part of her leg is amputated. There's a hint of violence, a hint of blood shed around her foot, but a very beautiful, very curvaceous, womanly woman on my cover.
That's fantastic. Listen, Chisechi, thank you so much for coming in, Doctor. Again, the book is called Sex and International Tribunals, The Erasure of Gender from the War Narrative. You can pick it up online. And if people want to find out whether the book is available locally, do you Facebook? Is there a Twitter aspect? Is there a website that they can visit just to find out that kind of information?
Yeah. The information will be posted on The Alchemist, Women in Leadership. I don't know if you're aware, but I'm the I'm the editor-in-chief of The Alchemist.
Okay.
Yeah, the founding editor is, as you know, Chimango Chikwanda.
Yeah.
And we have a Facebook page for Alchemy Women in Leader and our allies and our male allies. And we'll post updates on this book very regularly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Well, again, thank you so much for coming in this evening and blessing us with your presence. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you so much.
The book, again, it's called Sex and International Tribunals, The Erasure of Gender from the War Narrative.